And we're your hosts. I'm Diane Bortoletto.
And I'm Monique Chicardo.
Let's do it.
Hello, hello, and welcome to And Away We Go, F1 Podcast, a Formula One podcast that goes beyond the track limits to talk about travel, food, and lifestyle surrounding the sport. I'm Diane Bortoletto, your pre-Drive to Survive fan, and today I'm in Margaret River. And this week, Monique is unwell, so we've very sadly missing Monique this week, but we're joined with Riley Sullivan, who is a Formula One and lifestyle journalist who's just back from Singapore. Welcome back to the pod, Riley.
Thanks for having me. Great to be back.
It's so good to have you, and thanks for being able to jump in. So you were in Singapore where McLaren won the Constructors. Your second time in Singapore as a Formula One journalist. So tell us, how did the weekend go?
Oh my God, the weekend was fantastic. I think it was pretty exciting. I mean, we knew sort of going into it that obviously McLaren was likely to secure the championship that weekend. I think there was a lot of like excitement for that, that it was going to be back-to-back Constructors champions. I think that's a great moment for them. It was the first time, I think, since the early 90s maybe that they'd had back-to-back. Yeah. So a huge moment, and it kind of felt like a little bit emotional, I think, for them as well, especially after the checkered flags, when we went up to the press conference room for the kind of post-race press conference. They were all there and they were just like, you could smell all of the champs and they'd just been celebrating. Yeah. And then they were celebrating for hours after. And yeah, it was an amazing moment.
I bet. McLaren is all that anybody has been talking about this last week. And it's really interesting seeing all of the Australian media, mainstream media, jump on this as well, where normally, you know, Formula One has been getting more mentions in mainstream media in the last couple of years. Well, since Oscar really, and, you know, when Daniel got booted off, they picked that up, obviously. Yeah, so it's just really interesting seeing them share clips on social media as well about Formula One, which they don't always do. A lot of hot news, I would say, is coming out of McLaren. So first, you said the podium celebrations in Singapore, which of course happened without Oscar, who was in the media doing interviews. So there's been a lot of talk about that, about how McLaren left him out of those celebrations. Lando was on the podium. Yeah. Both Zach and Andrea were on the podium. Have you got any thoughts about that?
Well, it's a little bit complicated. So basically, the drivers break off. So if you have a 1-2-3 podium finish, you go to a cool down room and then you do a press conference with TV in the press conference room. Like they do a little bit of the other broadcasters, but then they're ushered into the press conference room. That's obviously at one end. That's up in the pit building. The other end is the media pen down in the paddock. That's where all the other drivers go. So if you don't finish on the podium, you go straight down there and they can do press. And that can take a while because there's all the different broadcasters. Like they're probably there for, I mean, easily, they could be standing there for half an hour, 40 minutes, just doing all of the post-race stuff in the pen, which is not up in the kind of pit building. It's down in the paddock.
So what's the distance between those two places?
Like it's a few minutes to get down there. Like it's not adjacent, especially after a race. There's a huge crowd. It's certainly opposite ends, I guess, layout of at least Singapore. I mean, based on where they would have been, yeah, there would have been a bit of an awkward split because naturally Lando was on the podium, Oscar wasn't. So they were not going to be together straight away in any event. I think that, again, like the optics of it, you know, it's a little bit,
terrible.
Yeah, not great.
It's terrible.
But it's easy done. And also, it's chaotic as well. Like, there's so much, you know, even you watching the McLaren people, the press people there trying to wrangle everyone. Like, it's chaotic. I don't think it was sort of an intentional snub, but I do think that there probably wasn't a lot of thought maybe ahead of time. Like, okay, what do we do in the event that, you know, one's on the podium, one's not?
No, this is what I have issue with because it wasn't unexpected. Mm. It was expected that McLaren were going to take out the title at Singapore.
Yeah.
Like it was a high possibility with, you know, Oscar and Lando just had to score, I think it was 19 points, and then it was going to be mathematically impossible for any other team to catch up with them. So the chances of that happening were pretty high. So in the event of them winning the Constructors' Championship and then, like, surely there would have been some discussion of let's go onto the podium and get a team photo. Like the FIA or Formula One wouldn't have gone at you know, 1 second before they did it, oh, do you want to go down the podium and take a photo? I don't believe it would be that spontaneous. And I also feel like if that was happening, it would take a few minutes for all of those team members to get up on the podium. Somebody could have radioed somebody else, the press officer in the pen, and said, get Oscar back here. I just feel like it was a bit clumsy by McLaren and a little bit sloppy. And like you said, the optics are terrible because that's one of the things that, you know, a lot of fans are arcing up about, that the media is arcing up about. I just feel like in that event, McLaren could have done and should have done a better job.
I mean, I do. I think that clumsy is a good word because, again, it's a historical moment for the team. But I do think in some ways, the fact that they've wrapped this up so early in Singapore is freeing for Oscar and Lando to just get back to the racing. That's what we want to see. We don't want to see the tactical stuff. I mean, that's interesting, but really you want to see wheel-to-wheel racing. And now we've got, you know, half a dozen races where they can really just go for it. And they don't have to worry about, you know, the sort of, the papaya rules. Yeah.
Well, I think they still will have to worry about the papaya rules because that rule is don't crash into your teammate. Yeah. I think they will be a lot, well, I hope that they will be a lot freer to race and there won't be, like you said, the interference from the team. Oh, Lando had a bad pit stop, Oscar swapped places, or, you know, Oscar's penalty was unfair, you know, give it back to him. Not that they did that, but you know what I mean? What was the chatter in Singapore like amongst like the other journalists as far as McLaren goes?
In terms of Oscar and Lando, like, I think that there's a perception that there's tension maybe. I think that you could see that. I mean, obviously, when they had that moment, right, like at the first corner, of course, everyone was like, what's that all about? And, you know, you heard Oscar on the radio, like, what's happening? I don't know if this is just the perception of Lando, but I do think seeing him in the press conferences and stuff, I think that he seems a little bit, I don't know, like there's so much weight on him. And I think that that is showing a little bit. And he was a little bit short with journalists, definitely, with questions. And he wasn't entertaining questions about kind of silly things. Because obviously, you know, in addition to asking them actual good, relevant questions, journalists are always going to go for a headline or something funny about, oh, could Max make it? You know, what's your, out of 100, what percentage chances Max have of making a comeback? And he just wasn't entertaining that. Like, he was just not in the mood for it. And I think that this season has been a huge for him professionally, but I think it's also been a massive weight.
It probably is a massive weight on both of them. On Oscar, who at one point was, I don't know, what was his biggest lead? I think 40-something points. He had a decent lead in the championship, and that's been chipped away at. And some of that has been as a result of team interference or the papaya rules. And some of that has just been, you know, bad luck, like, I guess, Baku, where he crashed out.
Yeah, because what was that about? I mean, what did you make of that crash? Like, do you think that was a sign that the pressure's getting to them? Was it just a, you know, a mistake?
I honestly think it was just a mistake. I think Oscar, because he qualified lower, I think he really wanted a good start and jumped the start and then ended up stalling and then was right at the back of the pack, right? So then I think he was just trying to make up and just went in way too hot on that corner, locked up, and then ended up in the walls. Maybe it was the pressure of trying to make up places to not be so far behind and then just ruined his entire race.
I think on some level, the pressure would be immense to not only secure the constructors, but now to be in this heat for the drivers' championship is huge. I mean, for Australia, to bring it home for Australia, can you imagine the sort of excitement for us? It's just building. And going back to your point about the media coverage, this is a pretty significant moment for Aussie sport, for Aussies on the world stage. And I think it really transcends just another Formula One season, especially, I mean, from an Aussie point of view.
It's not been since 1980, Alan Jones, that we've had a Formula One champion. And then that's a really, really long time, 45 years. Yeah. So yeah, I hope Oscar can just bring back that cool, calm, collected that we know him for and love him for and just channel that and hang on. I also think Max is on an absolute charge, and I think that Max will stop at nothing, even though at the moment, mathematically, it's tricky for Max to win the World Drivers' Championship, but it's not out of the realm of possibility. I mean, we just need another DNF from Oscar.
It's wide open.
Yeah, exactly. Everything changes. So hopefully that doesn't happen. Max has still got his eye on the prize. And when Max is laser focused like that, he's really, I think McLaren should be, like, both Oscar and Lando should be keeping their eye on Max. What do you think?
Oh, absolutely. And I also think that for Max to be in this position this year, after dominating so consistently, and then to have this year like this, he's so undiminished by that. Like, he's still so respected as, I think, the greatest talent, driving talent of his generation, arguably. And it's interesting that the fact of the matter is, it's not like he's leading the championship or anything, but whether it's media narratives or press conferences, everything comes back to Max. Even when he's in, you know, third place, everyone wants to know whether they're from South America or Europe, you know, ESPN, everyone's like, so what's the go with Max? What's the go with Max? It still revolves around Max, even when it's not.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's interesting.
Yeah, even when he's not.
At the top, yeah.
Yeah, that is interesting. Just while we're talking about Max and the McLarens, I saw a quote from Bernie Eccleston, who was the F1 Supremo before Liberty Media took over in, I think it was 2018.
Yeah, something like that.
But Bernie Eccleston's quote came out and said that he thinks that Oscar Piastri is the best driver on the grid after Max at the moment, which is, I thought, a really interesting quote.
Yeah, an interesting quote. I think it's kind of a, you know, after Max, I mean.
Is he stirring the pot?
Yeah.
Is he stirring the pot?
Yeah, you know? But Bernie's known for, I think he's, you know, he said some interesting things in the past about different drivers. And I was reading randomly, I was actually reading Jenson Button's biography, which came out a few years ago, but I just had it like in my bag to read on the plane. Even, you know, 20 years ago, like obviously back then, Bernie was still very much involved in the ownership of the sport. He's always sort of there. He's always good for a quote to stir things up.
A one-liner. What did you do in Singapore?
This time last year was my first race weekend, and I really didn't know a lot of the... They don't give you a manual. There's a timetable, but there's not like a, okay, you know, if you want to chat to this driver, like, it's good to be here at this time. And, you know, the sort of like that kind of stuff, because again, like, there's so many journalists who are there that are covering it all year. And I don't want to say territorial, but, you know, it's their job. Like, they're there to work. They're super serious. And I have massive respect for that. And I don't want to be like, you know, kind of cutting in or anything like that. But yeah, you do have to sometimes like just take your chance. And so this time I really wanted to make an effort to go to all the press conferences, all of the sort of open media calls that I could. And then in addition to that, I did have a one-on-one with Nico Hülkenberg, who was my first driver interview last year. I got to catch up with him again. So that was pretty awesome.
So 1 year on from your first interview with Nico, did he say anything different? Who is this article for? Where can we read it when it's
out? So it's for a magazine. I can't say which one, but it will be coming up pretty soon. I'll be able to share it. But basically, he's in a completely different place. So this time last year, or at the start of last year when I spoke to him, he was at Haas. He was starting to build momentum up, better and better results, you know, fifth places, sixth place finishes. And then you could see that, okay, something's happening here. And then this year, you've really seen that, I guess, kind of turn into podiums, and you've seen it turn into kind of
A podium.
Yes, that one podium. So I think he's in a different place now, you know, in that sense. Last time I spoke to him, I wanted to know about the time that he was out of the sport between leaving Formula One the first time and then having that break and being a reserve and coming back at Haas. I was curious about that, and how did that motivate him, and how did that change him coming back? This time, it's all about the here and now, and also next year with Audi. So a lot of the story is going to be about Audi and about how...
Bullish.
Yeah, and how he's sort of in this really unique position. He's kind of two teams at once, because he's still laser focused on this season with Sauber, but he's also in the middle of this Audi project. So they're going to come together, but at the moment, it's almost like he's doing double time.
Yeah, okay. But it's the same thing. I mean, the same team, right? Like, Sauber is becoming Audi, right? I expect a lot, not all, but a lot of the personnel will be the same. That their factory is going to be in the same place. They're not moving. Do you know what the major differences are going to be between what's now and what Audi will be?
I do believe Audi as a German car maker, one of the most iconic and famous, they've never really been involved in Formula One, shockingly, you know, which is kind of funny to think. So they are coming into the sport. I think there's going to be huge interest in that. There's going to be a lot more eyes on Sauber than there is right now. I also think the culture of the team is going to shift from one of the smaller teams, sort of an independent team, you know, Peter Sauber and the history of it, that is going to be gone. It's almost like when, you know, someone like Mercedes came in or, yeah, Red Bull, it changes it. And another thing as well, and you can really credit, I think, Nico for this, is that they're sitting at, what, eighth place in the constructors. So they're going to be likely when the season finishes, eighth place. That means that they'll be moving up the paddock. They're going to be closer to the midfield teams. At the moment, they're right at the end because I guess your place in the paddock is based on your results the previous year. So
exactly.
I think that at the moment, you know, if they're able to start as Audi in 2026 in, you know, the middle of the paddock, I think psychologically that's a huge shift. And I think it will feel like a new team, even though it is, they're absorbing Sauber and they're absorbing the resources. And I think a lot of the personnel, as far as I know, they're all kind of staying on. Like a lot of them were saying, oh, you know, we'll be Audi soon. So I think they're absorbing it, but I think it's going to be a completely different feeling.
Yeah, I can understand that. And with Audi, you'd expect there to be like all of those additional resources that come with such a huge car manufacturer, and also Nico Hülkenberg being German and Audi being German, there'll be, I guess, added pressure on him to do sponsor activations and local media or media in general. Yeah.
Or even a German Grand Prix. You know, we haven't had a German Grand Prix.
Oh, I know. Come on.
That's right. Because think about, you know, the Dutch Grand Prix. Well, that was dead for decades. Obviously, that came back in 2021. Yeah. I think Max was a huge part of bringing that back. So I think that, you know, German driver, another German team, you know, the potential of this to really, like, do something big, I think, for the sport is pretty. I think that's what attracted Nico to it, because he signed on like last year because it was Audi. That's why he made the shift, you know?
Yeah, makes sense. Rumors I've heard, Christian Horner being linked to Ferrari. Doesn't seem like a natural cultural fit, Horner and Ferrari. And I've also seen that Horner was in talks with Haas, but I think that's been rebutted and saying that's, you know, yes, there was an approach from somebody who's representing Horner just to gauge interest, but that's not happening. Have you heard anything about that?
Well, that was definitely a topic of discussion in Singapore in the principals press conference. Everyone was asking them, has Christian Horner called you? You know, they asked Andy, they asked at Aston Martin, they asked James at Williams. There's a, you know, they were basically like asking every single principal, because the understanding is at the moment that he is fielding a lot of different teams. It's not just one. As far as Ferrari, I would find that surprising if that was, you know, I just, again, I think culture fit. And I also just, I think he wants more like an ownership stake. I don't think that he just wants to be coming back into the sport as a kind of Flavio Briatore type figure. Like, I think he wants a pretty like specific thing, which is a stake in a team, a financial stake. And again,
he wants to be Toto Wolff.
Yeah, yeah, he wants that, because again, I think that probably this whole experience with Red Bull, I think he wants to kind of come back leading the pack. And I don't think he wants to be in that position again of being able to be ousted by a board or whatever. Like, I think that he wants that security. So again, there's only really a few teams. I don't think it's going to be Alpine unless, you know, Flavio Briatore, unless something big happens. I don't think it'll be Alpine. But yeah, I mean, I thought maybe Haas was a likely option because it seemed like they could do with the money. But I don't know. It seems like, I really don't know where he's going to end up. But Ferrari, I would be very surprised. That reminds me actually of another sort of narrative that seems to be floating around, which was the George Russell contract talks, and allegedly how part of the sort of delay on that is that he wants to do less sponsorships, less media stuff.
Yes, I've heard that as well. Mm.
So I did ask in the press conference, I asked Charles Leclerc and Alex Albon if that, I didn't ask them directly about George, but I said, look, you know, there's this narrative now that there's more and more sponsor obligations. Like, is there too much, basically? And they both kind of, they were diplomatic, of course, but they basically said, yes, there is too much, that the drivers are really fighting for free time. Again, you know, it's an interesting moment. I think that, I don't know whether, I don't know, like, I think Charles Leclerc is a massive asset to Ferrari. I don't think he's going anywhere. But again, I think that, I don't know, are they holding up their end of the deal for Charles Leclerc?
It's hard to know, isn't it? You know, we get sniffs of that Ferrari performance, don't we? That it's there. And then it just feels like there's always one thing after another with that team as to why they're not generating results. So it's so hard being a Ferrari fan. It's tough.
It is interesting as well, I think, with Leclerc, because it's a family affair. His brother is one of the test drivers. His brother does a lot of endurance racing for Ferrari. So they're in, you know, they're all in with Ferrari. But it just seems like at the moment that, I don't know, there's something, it's just not clicking from the car performance point of view, and also optimizing it for Leclerc.
And Lewis, like both of them. Generating results is just not, you're right, it's just not clicking. On some tracks, I think it is the car. Like the car just doesn't have the pace of the other cars. It's a bit slower. And other times, I just think they make the wrong decisions as far as tyre strategies, pit stop strategies, that kind of thing. You know, you hear the drivers complaining about it on the radio. Oh, the other thing I wanted to talk about was, and you might have missed it because you were obviously there live, was the broadcast feed. And we've had Carlos Sainz coming out and saying that, you know, the broadcasters need to pay less attention to the girlfriends and wives at the track and more attention about what's happening on the track. Pretty difficult because McLaren won the constructors, so the cameras were on that, where we missed Lewis Hamilton's last lap where he lost his brakes and was just missing all of the corners and going off the track, essentially because he didn't have any brakes and he had Fernando Alonso right behind him. So we miss that watching that on TV because the camera focus was elsewhere. I guess no one was talking about that in Singapore because you were living in the moment and living the McLaren celebrations, I guess.
Yeah, I definitely heard about that. The feed that I was seeing in the media room, it was, I believe, the F1 TV feed. We didn't really see much, but I could see from afterwards, like watching it back, they were panning to, is it Rebecca, I think, is Carlos Sainz's girlfriend, and Liam's girlfriend, Hannah. Like, they were showing them a lot. But I don't know. I think that the fact of the matter is, I'll be the first to say, it wasn't like a particularly exciting race for the most part. Or I think sometimes that the camera people and the broadcast people are probably thinking, okay, how can we sort of spice this up? Because parts of it were boring, I'm going to be honest.
Well, I mean, I didn't find the race boring, probably because I was so angry after the lap one incident with Oscar, that I was just like, my body was just running with emotion the whole time. So I didn't find the race sort of sleepy and boring per se, but I can understand why other people definitely would have.
And also, I saw on the feed, it was a lot of, obviously everyone was watching Max and Lando. That was sort of like, oh, is he going to overtake? Is he going to overtake? And obviously, in the end, that was kind of nothing. But there was a lot of focus on that too. And I felt like we were missing other stuff as well. That seemed like that was excessively covered and then to the detriment of other more interesting things happening.
I agree. It was just Lando trying to catch Max and not being able to pass him. And then exactly right, where there were other battles down the field. And, you know, George Russell was so far ahead that, you know, he hardly got any airtime at all because he wasn't being contested by anybody. Another rumour that I've heard, yes, Riley, is what's going on with Team RB and Red Bull as far as their driver lineup.
That's an interesting one.
So, yeah, I have heard. So, McLaren cut ties with Alex Dunn, who is one of their development drivers. Yep. They announced that and it seemed all very quite abrupt and out of the blue, which suggests that perhaps Alex has got a deal somewhere else, which is why that they've cut ties with him. Could that be with Team RB, with Racing Bulls? And does that mean that Yuki's out of a seat in Red Bull next year if Isaac Hadjo is going to be promoted from Racing Bulls to Red Bull?
I think it would be a mistake to promote Isaac to Red Bull because I think that he's doing, and Liam as well, like they're doing great where they are. And I think that clearly there's issues with the second Red Bull seat and it's a poison chalice. And there's a line of drivers that have been, including Liam, who've kind of been put into that seat and then taken back out. I like it how it is personally. I think that the second Red Bull seat is up for grabs, but then I don't know. Do you think they would really get rid of Yuki?
If you look at his times compared to to Max. I mean, how do you compare anybody to Max and make it fair is a good question. Yeah. But he's really, points-wise, he's on paper, Yuki looks like he hasn't really measured up. And if you look on paper, you can say, wow, Checo did a phenomenal job. Yeah. Comparatively
justice for Checo.
Last year. Yeah, exactly. Justice for Checo. Oh, there's so many hashtags justice for Oscar at the moment floating around as well, which I think is quite hilarious in terms of McLaren, the perception that McLaren is favouring Lando.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, I think I would hate to see Yuki lose his seat because he was doing really well in Racing Bulls and gets promoted up to Red Bull, probably not really wanting that poison chalice seat, as you said, but has been thrust into it and probably doing the best that he can, which isn't fantastic on paper. I'm with you. I don't want to see Isaac promoted to Red Bull either. I think he's doing really well in Racing Bulls. It's his first season.
Like, yeah.
Give the kid a chance just to settle into to Formula One and really get that solid foundation before throwing him in the deep end that's full of sharks.
Another one I heard, I don't know if this is much weight to it, was that Alex Albon could take the Red Bull seat there because obviously Red Bull has that, the corporate ownership of Red Bull is in Thailand and that the owners there want to bring him back. Because remember he had that seat back in the day, briefly. Yeah. That they would like to see him go back to that seat. I don't know how that would work with his Williams deal, but that was, yeah, someone said that.
I don't think he would want it. I feel like I've heard Alex talk about his Red Bull days in the past as being kind of traumatic, and you can understand why. No, I wouldn't like to see that. I really like the Alex and Carlos Sainz pairing at Williams. I think Carlos is doing brilliantly at Williams. Obviously, he got the podium, which was so emotional for the whole team. Yeah. And I also think that Carlos is pushing Alex to become a better driver, but not in a negative way, in a collaborative, healthy, competitive way. I really like that pairing at Williams. I wouldn't like to see that changed.
But do you think for Alex's point of view, he's becoming the second Williams driver now, and he's sort of been, in terms of optics, like now that Carlos is the one that came back with the podium.
Well, I think up until that moment, there probably wasn't that optic.
Yeah,
you
okay.
know that Alex was the second driver. I think, again, on paper, Alex has outperformed Carlos in the Williams this season up until that point. And then Carlos got that magnificent podium and perhaps the perceptions are shifting a little bit. You know, also too, Williams brought Carlos into the team because of Carlos's ability to provide technical feedback to the engineers to help improve the car because he's won a bunch of races and he brings with him a lot of knowledge to help. I feel like they brought Carlos in for that specific reason. I feel like Williams, without papaya rules, which, you know, it's almost becoming a swear word in my mind now. It's just papaya rule.
Yeah.
Papaya rule. But I feel like Williams will probably position them as equals until it comes down to a situation like we've got with McLaren. And then I think James Vowles will make a call on which driver to back to win a driver's championship. That's kind of how I see it playing out. All conjecture, of course.
Yeah. What do you think about Jack Doohan?
Oh, I would love to see Jack Doohan back. Of course, would love to see him back in Formula One. But I, at the moment, I just can't see it happening. I feel like no one's talking about Jack Doohan in the media and it's all gone really quiet. Maybe I'm wrong. I feel like in 20 years we're going to, you know, see Jack do an interview talking about some other code of motorsport and then it'll be like, oh yeah, and you did 5 races in Formula One. How was that? I feel like that's
where it's going.
I hate to say it. What do you think?
Again, it's that Aussie thing. I kind of am incredulous. Like I'm so invested in Jack, aren't we all? As Aussies, you know, and the racing dynasty is such an irresistible thing with his dad and they are duo in the paddock. I've been really invested in it. And I think that in Singapore, I was like, okay, you know, what's the go here? Because Alpine, I think they've shut the door. They've made it clear that I think the second seat for Alpine next year is going to be a shootout between Colapinto and the I forget his name, the Estonian reserve. I can't remember.
Paul Aaron. Yeah. Look, a reserve in a different team with a promise, I think, is a better option than Alpine at the moment for Jack. Hi, everyone. We've had a technical glitch with the recording and I've lost Riley. So he did say, thank you very much for having me on the podcast. His predictions to win the World Drivers Championship is Max Verstappen. Wowzers. So I'm terribly sorry. This has only happened once before and we were able to salvage an episode without having to jump on and blame tech. But here I am. Thank you very much, everybody, for your understanding and listening and the world of podcasting. Hey, it's not always sunshine and rainbows. Appreciate your support. Just to finish up my predictions of the championship, I'm going to say Oscar to win the World Drivers' Championship. I'm going to say Max is going to leapfrog Lando and Lando in third. I think Lando might push that bit too hard to try it. He might take extra risks just to try and bump up his points and will either make a mistake or be forced to make a mistake by someone like Max. As soon as there's a whiff of opportunity, Max is just going to sweep in there. But I also think that Oscar will, I think he will hang on. If Oscar doesn't win the World Drivers' Championship, my reason for that will be that the team has probably interfered in somehow. Let's hope that doesn't happen again, right? We're done with papaya rules. We're done with McLaren manipulating races. Just leave them be. Get your elbows out, Oscar. You've got this. Got this. Well, thanks very much for coming back on the podcast and talking about Singapore with us. And just so good to have those insights from somebody there on the ground, hearing all those rumours almost firsthand and also explaining how it all works in the back end. Well, I better do Monique's bit now, hadn't I? Yeah, and let's hope that she's feeling better and is back next week. Hang on, what does she say? Well, thanks everybody for listening. If you've liked what you've seen, hello, if you're watching on YouTube, what you're seeing, what you heard, please drop us a like and a follow. We're on all the social media accounts, TikTok, YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Riley Sullivan, and thank you for having us in your ears. Until next week, and until lights out.
It's lights out. Away we go.
And Away We Go podcast is produced by Diane Bortoletto and Monique Ciccato. Let's do it.